Welcome to episode 57 of Speak Beastie for March 11th, 2018. I'm Lizzie.
I'm Amy.
And today we have two special guests, actually, from one of our sister podcasts, Alohomora, Kat and Allison.
What's up?
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
So, Kat, you've been on the show before. Allison, is this your first time, actually?
No, I've been on once before with Claire. Okay. And I know Claire was on that episode. Eleanor might have been on that episode. I don't remember who else was on that episode. I talked about Greek mythology a lot, though. Yeah.
Well, it's great to have you both back.
Thanks. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah.
Yay.
Me too.
So, we are still waiting for a trailer, if anybody was wondering. Trailer update. Still not
a trailer
here.
For what now? No, I'm just kidding.
It's been so long, I've forgotten.
Is there like a thing happening this year? Like a movie coming out or something? What?
It's only in a couple of months. It's fine.
What?
It's fine.
I guess we are about 6 months out now, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
wait.
No, not
eight
quite.
Months. 8 months.
Yeah.
Is it usual for like a film 8 months out to not even have a teaser? I guess It is, right?
It's not unusual when they just finished filming 5 weeks ago.
Oh, well.
Has it only been that long? Oh my gosh, I feel like it's been much longer
than
that.
It was just after the news.
Usually the teaser is like out pretty early. I don't know.
Well, we did get a teaser at the celebration. We got clips.
If you could call it that. That
yeah,
was lame.
It wasn't like to
That's
everyone.
What they're
going to
call it.
And it's not like, yeah, it's not like it was like publicly available, really.
Well, yeah. They aired it at a theme park. It's publicly available. They just didn't release
well, no,
it on
sorry,
any
that's
of their
not
outlets.
What I meant. Yeah, I meant it hasn't been like widespread. That's the word I was looking for.
Mm-hmm. Tis true.
Yes.
We want a trailer. I'll be that guy in Parks and Rec who always starts that. We want a trailer. We want a trailer.
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you, yes you, the magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as one dragon dollar a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes features. But wait, there's more! Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs Knees and How.
And now for the Phoenix Register. Did I do it right?
I don't know. Ariel, was that right?
I'll have to ask. So, yeah, news is a little sad in this department lately. But funny enough, the only news we do have, I wrote up. So, this article, if you go to MuggleNet.com, is called Eddie Redmayne Would Love to Tease Us About Crimes of Grindelwald. And my first line was, unfortunately, he can't. I'm just going to take a moment and just laugh at my own cleverness writing this article. It's fine. Whatever.
Sad face.
So basically, in this article, Eddie is promoting Early Man, his new animated film. What Eddie did talk about in this interview that had to do with Fantastic Beasts was what it was like on set of the second film. He called the second script most intricate, with extraordinary threads that pull you back into the world of Potter and collect the beast lore. So it seems we're going to be getting more beasts. Hooray!
Yay! That way they can add beasts. They can add them to more books. They're ergo sell more books.
That was a very
It is always the goal. Look. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe there'll be things that are already in the book that we haven't seen before.
Maybe, but they're also just going to keep adding new beasts and just keep putting out new editions of. I mean, she even said it in the latest one.
True.
Like, as the movies go on, essentially, you're just going to have to keep buying books because I'm going to keep making them.
So you're telling me I'm
going to
have 7 copies of this book?
Probably, if you buy them all like a sucker. Yep.
There's so many the book that we haven't seen yet, though. So I do hope that they get to some of those.
Especially, I want to see like, the Yeti.
Yeah, like the illustrated book. Like, there's so many really cool ones in there that I just really want to see on film.
Yeah. Yeah. And it also seems we're going to be getting more ties to the Harry Potter books. It wasn't really clear if that means, like, actually people close to Harry or just, like, name-dropped things or little connections or tie-ins. Not quite clear.
I feel like it'll continue to be, like, in the first one, like, the little, you know, subtle hints, like, the cute little, like, seeker comment, like, stuff like that that just kind of is like, oh, we're back.
And I guess we've got a few, like, family ties.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, that'll definitely
maybe that's
be a
what
thing.
He was talking about. He also mentioned what it's like when J.K. Rowling comes on set. And it was really sweet because he talks about how her characters, and it says, it's amazing because of how passionate she is. It oozes from every pore of her, and you feel so inspired because you know how much she cares about every single character. And I was just like, aw. My little writer heart was like, yeah. And also that everybody kind of crowds her when she's on set asking for advice about their characters. And she gives it to them, but she also kind of tells them, this could change. So.
How awkward would it be if, like, something did a total 180 and she, like, told an actor something and they played the part that way for, like, 3 films and then suddenly it was like, oh, never mind.
Well, didn't that happen? Didn't Dan Fogler say that, like, Joe told him this whole arc or something and then Eddie came up to him and was like, yeah, that's completely, like, out the window?
Really? I don't remember that.
He was talking about it in, like, his podcast when he had Eddie on.
Yeah, I think we're probably going to get there in the main discussion. I think what you're thinking about is what's coming up.
I am teasing you all. Now you have to keep
listening. Unbeknownst to even yourself. Yes.
Look at that, WB. A teaser trailer. Before the content.
We are the teaser trailer. Speaking of teasing things, this is just like, this is a direct quote from Eddie Redmayne, and I just find it absolutely hysterical. So the interviewer asked him if he could tell us anything about the new beasts. And in the article, the transcript of the interview, Eddie like checks with someone. And then he says, mate, I would so love to tease lots of things. And I don't know why.
Eddie, wink, wink.
the greatest soundbite I think you could pull. And if I could do his voice, I would have read it in his voice, but I can't.
Yeah, that I think that's a, I didn't mean to say it like that moment. Yeah.
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 But it seems like there's a lot he wishes he could tell us about this movie.
You know,
but we have to wait.
The thing is, like, if you look back at patterns, there's always a calm before the storm, and this is just the quiet moment before the drop.
True.
So I think we need to appreciate this because pretty soon it's going to get to the point where you're not going to be able to go on social media if you want to stay unspoiled. So
that's true.
I say don't push the trailer. Like, it will be here exactly when it's meant to be. And for right now, enjoy blissful ignorance.
It is a wizard, after all. It never arrives late or early, but precisely when it means to.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay, you try telling that to Megyn Kelly. We'll see how that goes.
Anyway, that is the news.
Very good job, Allison.
Thank you!
Uh-huh. Gold star.
Yay!
So I was thinking before we hopped into main discussion, we don't have any owls. Unfortunately, they're all, you know...
Like, what? None,
that's so
I know,
sad.
None arrived this week. We called, and no one came flocking. They didn't come flying. But
Errol has lost the post again.
Yes. So I was thinking we could highlight two things from our common room really quick. Because our common room, we get some really cool discussion pieces. And that's always available to people that support us on Patreon. And so one thing I thought we could talk about, since we were talking about the trailer and how it'll come when it's supposed to, is one of our Patreons posted today that Warner Brothers Japan announced a Fantastic Beasts fan event for March 22nd. And the link takes you to Warner Brothers' website, obviously the Japan, you know, landing page of it. And when I try to translate it, you know, from Google, all it says is advance release, March 22nd.
Mm.
Fantabby kickoff fan event.
Hmm, weird.
Fantastic Beasts special fan party holding commemorative Twitter. I'm sure, you know, like, the English is a little off, obviously. But very interesting. No news on anything, you know, like in the US, in England. But
does anyone speak Japanese? Who wants to translate that for us?
But very curious. Very curious. We'll see what happens in the upcoming days if any of those events pop up. Because I'm so sad I missed the last one. I don't know how I missed it.
What was the last one? I honestly don't remember this happening.
The last fan event they had is when they released, they were doing the five films, and they, like, had all the audiences there, and
that's when they said it'd be five movies instead of three.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was, like, before the first one came out.
Mm-hmm. And that's when they gave up the I Want to Be a Wizard t-shirts, which didn't even make it into the film.
They had t-shirts with that on there? What?
Yeah.
How did I miss everything that happened?
They sold t-shirts with that on it, too.
I can't.
And then it wasn't in the film.
Awkward. I don't think they ever sold t-shirts with it in it.
I thought they did.
I don't think so.
I'm pretty sure there was a Hot Topic t-shirt.
I'm sure somebody grabbed onto it and was selling them, but...
Yeah, so that's one thing. And then another quick conversation from our common room. One of our Patreons had a thought and wrote, does Dumbledore's break from Grindelwald parallel Godric Gryffindor's break from Salazar Slytherin? Ooh. Both were very close initially and then became enemies. And now I can't stop thinking about Godric Salazar love. And she wrote, hashtag Galazar forever.
I want to know where they got the idea that Godric and Salazar were that close. I mean, we know that all four of them were friends.
Right.
But where's the evidence to say that they were better friends than anybody else?
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Evidence! Give me proof! I tell my students this all the time. Why? Why do you say that? Give me a reason.
Interesting theory, though.
Yeah. I just have to say, since we're on Dumbledore for a second, recently I was being a nerd, because I am, and there's a great PBS documentary.
She says, recently.
This was like 2 days ago.
As if there are times when she's not.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, there's a great PBS show called Shakespeare Uncovered, and because I am a Shakespeare nerd, I was watching the whole thing, and one of the episodes is Hamlet, led by David Tennant, so it's fabulous in all ways. But he interviewed Jude Law about playing Hamlet for a while, and let me tell you, I've been a little on the fence about Jude Law as Dumbledore, but hearing him discuss how he approached and, like, the feelings he was trying to pull out of the to be or not to be speech, and also Hamlet's last line, which is the rest is silence, I was like, I see a tortured young Albus Dumbledore. So everyone send us owls about how you see Dumbledore relating to Hamlet. The end.
You know what I'm excited about for Jude Law Dumbledore?
What?
Jude Law is Dumbledore. Because he's pretty. Very pretty.
I have to say,
this is the one thing that Kat's not going to be negative about this entire episode.
Whoa, the one thing.
This is her happy moment.
Jude Law.
I mean, guys, there's like a solid 80% chance I will get to meet Jude Law. And like...
Okay, rub it in.
I'm going to because I'm excited. Not gonna lie. Like, that's exciting. He's the reason that I am obsessed with British men. That's not true, but he's a large part of the reason I'm obsessed with British men.
That's 100% not true.
But, getting back to the common room question, I don't buy the whole Slytherin Gryffindor are friends thing. I feel like it's kind of a Draco and Harry sitch where they were never biffles. Like, they never hung, they never got a drink at the pub after work. Like, that wasn't a situation that was ever a thing.
I feel like there could have been, like, a mutual respect type thing. Like, I don't know if they actually liked each other.
Oh, yeah. I think they were, like, colleagues. I mean, obviously they were colleagues. I'm sure they were friendly with each other. You know, the four of them came together.
Right.
I mean, the only evidence that we get that they were friends is the Sorting Hat song.
Sorting Hat doesn't lie.
Actually, I think you're right. I don't think the Sorting Hat has ever actually lied. Wow, it's like the only character.
Wow. I think I just stumbled upon something.
I mean, I feel like that's a topic for another episode.
Okay.
Also, who cares about the Sorting Hat? We are not dealing with it. Nobody's going to school in this movie.
Although, we are totally going to see Hogwarts again, so... Yeah,
that's true.
We could see the Sorting Hat.
That would be pretty dope. I doubt it, but maybe.
I mean, like, maybe,
what
like...
What if we see Newt getting sorted?
We won't.
And he's a Hufflepuff, and, like, so his brother cute. Is upset.
We won't.
Or he's upset.
We won't. Okay. I can confirm that we will not see that.
Killing our dreams.
Let me have this dream.
Oh, yeah, here. Okay, so it says, for were there such friends anywhere as Slytherin and Gryffindor? Unless it was the second pair of Hufflepuff and Ravenclaw. That's it. Like,
but it's talking about the houses themselves at that point, isn't it? It's not talking about the founders.
No, it is talking about the founders. The founders of our noble school thought never to be parted, united by a common goal. They had the same self... They have the same self-yearning to make the world's best magic school and pass along their learning. Together we will build and teach, the four good friends decided, and never did they dream that they might someday be divided. Were there such friends anywhere as Slytherin and Gryffindor? Yeah, they were friends, but this doesn't say that they were like bosom buddies, you know?
Yeah, but they were friends at one point, and then they quickly became enemies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They did. It's true. Can confirm. Sort of. Thanks to the Harry Potter lexicon.
So. All right. Shall we move on to main discussion?
Yes.
Let us dive into the murkiness.
Okay.
You're on it tonight, Al. You're on it.
I'm so good at this, guys. I should do this regularly.
That was a great transition. Beautiful. So,
when you get more sleep, you should do this regularly.
Yeah,
yes. So our main discussion is about the dark arts in Fantastic Beasts. Obviously, I think it's safe to say that this next film will probably be darker than the first one. I mean,
what?
That's kind of the feel I'm getting. And if it follows the pattern of Harry Potter, it will continue in that direction. So, first of all, what do you guys think about the characters themselves? Is there anyone who has the potential to go dark? Are there any, like, hidden bad guys or double agents or anything like that?
I have a lot of thoughts about people who could do this.
Well, let's hear them.
Well, we're going to talk about them all. We have them all in our notes. But I think my biggest one is I think Theseus is dark. And he might be playing a double agent.
Double agent? Ooh, see, that's fun.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that, too. Like, I've always kind of wondered, like, he's in the ministry. He has access to all of this, like, classified info and, like, powerful people. He's in a power position. Like, is he feeding things to the other side? Like, I don't know.
And
also, he knew Grave.
Oh, that's
did
true.
He?
Yeah, did get that, didn't that? We?
Because they wrote letters to each other. So there were definitely like some kind of correspondence. I'm trying to recall exactly where we learned about it, but I know they wrote letters back and forth to each other, and Newt came up, I think, like once or twice. So it would be interesting that, you know, Theseus never picked up on the fact that Graves all of a sudden wasn't exactly himself, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it feels so much like it's being set up as there's going to be some complicated history of Newt and Theseus, and they're going to be against each other in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if Theseus, because everybody thinks he's a war hero, but when the Minister for Magic mentions that, Newt looks like he's got this look on his face that could mean many things. And I think they had a falling out about something, maybe, that maybe Theseus has some ideology that aligns him with Grindelwald, and he and Newt had a falling out because of it. And now Theseus is playing both sides.
Which could also explain why Newt feels so hurt by Leta. Like, maybe it's not like a love triangle situation, but more of a Leta was his friend and is now aligning herself with Theseus's ideas that Newt doesn't agree with.
Ooh. Hold on, I have to backtrack and correct myself, because it was just Theseus writing to Newt, but in the letter Theseus wrote about Graves.
Gotcha.
Where's that from?
It's all over the place. I'm trying to find our version.
Yeah, no, it's that letter that was on the,
Yes.
Yeah.
That was on those posters.
What are you talking about, Willis?
The promotional posters way, way back. It was like our first look at all these main characters. And there's a letter in the background of Newt's from Theseus. I think that's where we found the name Theseus and that it was his brother for the first time.
Plausible.
I'm still digging, so you guys keep going.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Leta, that also kind of brings me around to, like, what we're saying about Theseus and his position in the ministry. Do we think there's a potential, like, I know it's, like, super, like, cliche to say that maybe Leta's dark, but do you think maybe she could be using Theseus for his position?
I think that we are going to see very little of Theseus at all in this film. I think that the majority of this journey is going to be Newt and Credence and that new snake lady, whatever her name is. What's her name?
Maledictus?
That's her condition.
Right, but we don't actually know her name. We don't actually know her name.
That's her condition.
Condition, right. And I think that we will see, like, the briefest moment of Dumbledore, the briefest moment of Theseus. And I think most of that... So, I don't want y'all to be disappointed, and I don't want to be disappointed, but I don't think we're going to get answers to any of those questions in this film.
So it's just a setup film, then.
Right. Yeah, I don't expect... I think so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's going to be so much more unfolding. Like, if this stuff happens, I think it will reveal itself down the road, because why would you want to spill all of this in, like, the second film? Like, I don't know. Yeah.
But I think we might get some hints or red herrings about people.
Right.
Because I feel like this is the movie, people are going to start taking sides a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yes.
And so, I mean, at least by the end, because I think it'll start full out exploding into sides in the third one, if we're thinking like a 5-act storyline for 5 movies.
Right.
So this is the point where, like, I mean, if you think in a 5-act storyline, this is kind of the point where the big conflict comes up. So I guess in this movie, we'll learn the big conflict, and probably by the end, we'll start to see how everyone's sifting out. And by 3, it will have exploded, we'll have clear-cut sides, and we'll be in the thick of it.
This has nothing to do with anything that we're talking about. I'm looking for an old article, and I just came upon one. Okay, it was a roundup that we did of casting news and character names. Guys, did we forget that they cast somebody to play Sasquatch? Like, did we forget about
that? Wait, what? Is that real?
So, this article says British actor Jason Newell has been cast as Sasquatch, a creature that has been described as a Yeti. The Yeti is one of the many fantastic beasts that appear in the original book. On his Twitter, and then there's a link, he stated that he was extremely excited to be a part of the Harry Potter world and that his prosthetic and costume were still being developed. Quote,
"Not
yet. My costume and prosthetics are being designed. You won't be able to see them until the movie is released." He tweeted that on December 10th, 2015.
Oh my
god. What is this article called? I feel very awkward.
At what point in that film would Sasquatch make an appearance?
I feel like it's just going to be like they're flying over some mountains and they look down and Newt is like, look, there's the Yeti. Like, what?
Right. Quite possibly.
I'm so glad they cut that.
Yeah, I feel like...
He's a nice guy. Like, I don't know.
I feel like this is a topic for the next episode where you guys need to comb through old news and find all the crap that was cut out. Because the thing is, like, here's the major difference between Beast and Potter, is we get tidbits like that, and then the screenplay changes and they're cut out. Like, if it's in the Potter books, it's in the Potter films. 99% of it, because, you know, there's a couple stupid added scenes, but for the most part, there's no surprises. And so
that's amazing.
That was really damn funny.
I cannot believe that.
Oh my god. Can you, like, send that to us, like, the link?
Uh-huh. I can. Will I? No, but I can. I'm just kidding. I'll send it.
Okay, going back again, I was correct originally. There is something. Theseus corresponded with Percival Graves. He and Graves corresponded regarding recent events in New York, though he was not impressed with his brother's magizoology career. He still seemed to have a close relationship with Newt. At the time, he had no knowledge of his brother's whereabouts, given that he sent a letter to Newt detailing how he had been assigned by the Ministry to help capture Gellert Grindelwald. He was wishing you well wherever you are and on whatever beastly quest you are undertaking. So there is something, and I feel like it's definitely in the screenplay if I wanted to, like, get up and go look for it, but then I would be combing through it. But they're okay, so I'm not completely crazy.
What if he's in Pyrrhus?
That's too easy.
What if he's in Mad-Eye Moody's trunk?
No, because why not? Because we haven't, I guess we've briefly seen someone who is working for the villain imperialized with Stan Shunpike, but we haven't seen anyone, and I guess Pious Thickness, but we haven't actually been, like, close to someone and seen, like, how that affects people who are doubting, like, is this really what they're doing, or what if something's wrong with them?
Barty Crouch.
Well, that, but we haven't seen how that affects the people who care about them. So what if his big thing is he's imperialized, but Newt can't tell? And Newt has to go through this, like, emotional struggle of, is this really what my brother believes, or is there somebody controlling him? And, like, how do I figure that out?
I could believe that, because I really, really, really don't think that they are even remotely close, Newt and Theseus.
I don't think they are either.
I think they're kind of oil and water They grew up together, but they have nothing in common.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. So
I almost get the feeling that, like,
he took his girl, so, like, there is beef somewhere.
I almost get the feeling that, like, we know their mother raised fancy hippogriffs, so I almost get, like, and Newt's the younger brother, so it's like maybe their father, like, took Theseus under his wing more, and Theseus is more like their father, and then Newt ended up following his mother around more and took after her more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's entirely possible for two people to be siblings and...
Oh, yeah.
You know, just... I mean, you cannot even know, like, if something's wrong with the other person because you just plain don't know them well enough to know. Not speaking from experience or anything. yeah, I mean, I buy it. Like, I feel like something could be going on with Theseus that, I don't know.
He has a really cool, like, dark, evil name, so I'm right. all about it.
Right.
But the actual Theseus, the Greek Theseus, was not evil at all.
Yeah, that's okay.
He was a cocky show-off, but he wasn't evil.
Sure.
And so I guess that would be interesting, that he's supposed to be this big, brash hero, and he's actually evil.
I mean, and the Sirius star is supposed to be, like, this really cool, super awesome star, and, like, Sirius is a D-bag.
Oh my gosh,
so.
You just hate Sirius.
For those listeners
Draco
who don't listen
dragon,
to Alohomora,
he's not.
I really don't like Sirius Black, so just sorry.
You have to balance out the Hufflepuffiness on this episode. It's fine. It all works out.
Lizzie's here to help me with that, so.
Yeah.
All right.
Speaking of Hufflepuffiness.
Yes. So, also, speaking
so
of things.
Dude, he's not. Okay, whatever. Continue. Sorry,
Amy. I'm
sorry.
Him because we
Do you
him.
Think he's not a Hufflepuff?
He runs a bakery. Come on.
You know, other houses like to eat, too.
No, they're not allowed to eat. No food for you.
Jane is our talent. So
he's, but no, that's my wait, ass. No, pause. I have to know what house you think he would be in if he was a wizard then, Kat.
I think he is incredibly adventurous. I think.
What?
Are you telling me that Jacob is not adventurous?
No, I think he goes on it and he, like, is excited, but he's not going to go seeking for one.
Well, he just.
I wholeheartedly disagree. Sorry,
he
Lizzie.
He didn't fight, though, in the war. He was expeditionary forces, which was just, like, digging trenches.
That doesn't,
which would suck.
That doesn't mean, okay, but you don't get to pick your job back then in the war.
And also, most people were drafted, so.
Right, and also, I mean, they probably wouldn't have put him on the front line anyway because he's overweight.
And let's face it, he probably wasn't drafted. He probably enlisted. Because of his weight.
Possibly. Mm-hmm.
No, I don't think
Maybe. Maybe.
But I think he wanted to live his life with his happy bakery, not go to war. He's not a war person.
No, he's not. But
he's a hippie in the 1920s.
But he's an adventurer.
I don't think so.
Girl, you cray.
Wait, so what?
I think he's game for it, but he's not looking
Gryffindor.
For it.
Okay.
Yeah, probably Gryffindor is where I'd put it, where I'd place him. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, speaking of things that we were originally told about these films and then did not happen, or I mean, could it happen? Maybe. So originally, Jacob.
I have the article here. If you want me to read it,
yeah, read the article because that's better.
Well, it's not a whole article. But it's some tweets, whatever. So the first one here is, it's on MuggleNet. It was published on May 27th, 2015. And therap.com was reporting on some casting rumors. And it says here that the quote-unquote villain, the role of Jacob, Newt's rival, was currently being cast at the time. Dan Fogler is, of course, on the list there. And then later on, a couple months later, July 10th, 2015, we definitely get confirmation that Dan got the job. And it says we know incredibly little about Jacob other than he is Newt's rival. That's it. And
That's right.
So I feel like people most definitely forget about that when they talk about Jacob, you know, because he's like this cute little like roly-poly baker who like trips over his suitcases and like is, you know, a little weird dude. But like he was supposed to be Newt's rival. And I personally think that's probably a storyline that Joe was like, I'm going to push that off another film. Maybe they aren't going to be rivals per se. But I do think, well, if we're going to talk about Jacob, we have to talk about Queenie. Because
Don't set up this dichotomy. It'll make me sad.
The thing is, you know, Jacob, so this is confirmed as far as I'm concerned that the rain at the end of the first film, you know, the Mertlap essence thing.
Yes.
And Frank's tears, I don't have words tonight, wash away bad memories.
Okay? Yes.
Bad memories. That is confirmed. Okay, so Jacob still has his memories because they aren't bad. Mm-hmm. They aren't bad. So what I see happening, and this was slightly teased, if you want to call that crappy clip we got at the celebration of Harry Potter back in January a teaser, you see Queenie with Grindelwald. And my theory, which I think is pretty plausible, is that Queenie wants to be with Jacob. And in America, which she is a citizen of, they are both citizens of the US of A, they aren't allowed to be together. And I truly think that Queenie is going to be seduced by Grindelwald's thoughts and plans and actions. She may not agree with his ideology and how he goes about things, but I think the final outcome is what Queenie is going to be seduced by, because she wants to be with her little baker. Mm-hmm. And I think that we're going to see a departure of Queenie from the little quartet, and possibly Jacob because of that, because I think he will follow her almost anywhere that she goes. So I think
I'm going to call it right now. They're already married. They secretly got married and they had to like go on the run or something.
Oh my God, no.
Yes.
No.
Yes, I want it.
I know you want it, but it's not going to happen.
Yes.
No.
So yes. Let's just like clear up any confusion, because I think the Kat, what you're saying is that Queenie will be drawn to the idea of living in the open as opposed to
for the greater good
being
for the
like
greater good.
Fighting. Correct? Mm-hmm.
For the greater good.
So like, yeah. I feel like she would see that idea as appealing and maybe overlook Grindelwald's ideas about non-magic people.
Or his methods.
And his methods, yeah.
Yes, because I think, obviously Queenie is a good person at heart, and I think that she thinks she will be able to have a positive impact on him.
Mm-hmm.
Because she can read his mind, although I think he's probably going to be blocking her from doing that. I think we're going to get, and I was reading a theory about this the other day online, and I tried to find it again because I know, Allison, you're going to freak out when I say this, but
oh, no.
People were comparing the potential Queenie-Grindelwald relationship to Kylo and Rey. And how they relate to each other about like how one of them wants to try and change the other in a way that is like so physically, emotionally, like totally impossible. Mm. And, you know, I think we could see a bit of that here. Yeah.
You know, I buy that though.
Yeah, I do too. That's why I was reading it. I was like, holy crap, this is so interesting. Wait, did you just say romantic?
I said, as long as it's not romantic.
Oh, no. I don't think it's going to be. Queenie only has eyes for her muggle. I wouldn't worry about that.
Yeah.
Something I kind of think is interesting, too, as we talk about Queenie's legitimacy. It seems like in the Harry Potter series, we were kind of conditioned to think of legitimacy as, like, dark magic, in a way, like, mm-hmm. used for bad.
Because it's invasive.
Yeah, and occlumency is like the light magic defense against it. So it's kind of interesting that, like, Queenie, we're given, like, this really lovable character who possesses that power that almost contradicts what we already know about it in a way. So I don't know. I just thought that was kind of interesting. Maybe it's like foreshadowing.
Yeah.
It just makes me sad. I love Queenie.
But do you think she'll go back to being good?
Yes. Because I think a major split then, if that happens, it'll be Queenie versus Tina.
Yeah.
Which is...
Right. Well, of course, because, like, don't forget about Credence. Because Credence, I think, Credence and Tina, I think we're going to see them big time in movie 2. I think that Tina probably ends up over in the UK because of Credence. I think that she'll have very little to do with Newt, quite honestly. I think her journey follows Credence. Ergo, you know, that's why Queenie is kind of around and why she's getting pulled into that stuff. And I think the four of them will be there. I think the journeys are going to be slightly more separate than they were in the first one.
Yeah, it makes me sad to think about, like, Queenie and Tina having, like, fighting each other.
You are a little cinnamon roll.
I know.
Girl, are you crying?
I just love them. And they just... No, I'm not actually crying. I love... One of my favorite little moments in the first film is when they're cooking dinner and Queenie reads Tina's mind and she's like, a hot dog for lunch? That's not very nutritious. And Tina is like, just leave me alone, you know? And just the way they take care of each other. And so it just makes me sad.
But you have to go through the dark to get to the light.
I know. You have to give things up for good storytelling, but it makes me sad.
No,
I don't have to be happy about it, dang it.
I don't think they'd be giving up anything. I think if you want their relationship to be strong and to always be like that, that they have to have disagreements and they have to learn to grow and understand each other and accept who that person is, regardless of what they go through.
Yeah, I was talking from a writer perspective, that you have to do mean things and bad things to your characters, even though you love them. And don't want anything bad to happen to them.
But I don't think it's a mean thing, even from a writery point of view. And I don't think Joe would think so either.
Well, it just makes me sad.
Sure. Not me. I say go for it.
I think it would definitely be a really interesting arc, so I'm all for it. Let's do it.
Me too. Plus, I just feel like Queenie is going to have the most amazing, like, dark arts costumes.
Oh, yes.
Dude!
Yeah. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They do have Colleen Atwood for this one too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so they're going to be amazing. Yeah, I just said that. Please forgive me. Forgive me. Being dumb. But for real, guys, Queenie, totally going to the dark side.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Not full like Anakin, but, you know, like
for her reasons. Yeah.
Kylo. She's the Kylo in this
I don't know. Kylo's...
Except for she's not a little whiny baby.
Yeah, she's... Yeah. She's more of like the... Gosh, is there a good equivalent in the Star Wars universe for Queenie?
I'm trying to think of one in anything.
Like, maybe... No, he's way too pure. Maybe Obi-Wan is the closest because he's not afraid. He's not afraid to do things that are a little... off, but even then, like, not so much. So maybe the listeners can tell us who they think Queenie is in the Star Wars universe.
All right. Is there anything else in regards to characters that we want to discuss?
I just hope she doesn't hurt anybody.
She's going to. You know she's going to. You gotta have some guilt, man.
No. That could be, like, the point where she realizes, oh, crap, what have I done?
Wait, that Queenie doesn't hurt anybody? Or yeah, Joe?
Queenie.
Oh. Well, I don't think... See, I think that's where the line is for Queenie. I think that, like Allison said before, that she's going to buy into that. You know, I think she wants to be with Jacob. Mm-hmm. Obviously, she wants to be with Jacob. And whatever she has to do to make that happen, up to a certain point, she's going to do. I really don't think she's going to purposely, knowingly hurt people. But she certainly could accidentally be involved with something that hurts somebody. So, I mean, we're supposed to see, like, what's that circus thing? There's like a circus thing. Yeah. Maybe she's involved with that weird circus thing. I don't know.
Have we talked about Lita much?
No, because that girl, mysterious as hell.
A little bit.
I don't know anything about her.
I'm so fascinated by her, actually.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I guess we kind of know this, but she's the reason Newt was expelled.
Right.
Yeah.
And I just want to know what happened.
Isn't that confirmed?
Yeah, but we just know that she was involved somehow and that it had to do with the beast. But we don't know exactly what happened, and I want to know exactly what happened.
Right, because he took the fall for something for her.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. And I want to know exactly what happened.
Well, you'll probably get that.
If Queenie goes dark, well, like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Do you think it's possible that she will be the one to sniff out, so to speak, if anything is fishy with Theseus or Lita?
Ooh, what if she and Lita team up?
No, I don't think so.
I don't know, I just am picturing, like, just the visual of it, and I'm like, what a witch gang.
Lita's in that cast photo, right?
Yes.
Where is
she? She's sitting, like, right next to Theseus in the center, and they have engagement rings on.
Yeah.
Oh, did you print that and, like, hang it over your bed so you can memorize it?
What? No.
Okay.
What? Where did that come from?
You just, like, pulled it out of nowhere. I'm just picking on you, Allison.
I know things, Kat. I know things. Haven't you learned this podcasting with me for, what, 3 years now?
Girl.
However long it's been.
Where the hell do you see engagement rings on Theseus and Lita?
On their fingers?
I swear someone, like...
No, bro.
I swear someone blew it up and saw them.
No, bro.
No, there is a ring on Lita, at least.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we would have never... Well, I mean, I don't want to say we would have never, well, but it was like the first indication that something was going on. Like, people were like, why are they sitting next to each other? That's kind of weird. Why she's got his hand? Why are their hands connected? Why she's got his hand on his arm? Blah, blah, blah. And then people, like, mega zoomed in. They were like, a ring?
It wasn't just the rings. If I remember right, they released, like, a description with it. And it was like, by the way, they're engaged.
Right.
I'm looking for the article.
Because I remember, like, reading it, and I was like, what the heck? Like, they just dropped that on us, like, in a caption with a photo, like...
Because I remember we had a huge conversation about it, because we were like, say, what?
But here's my question.
Oh, yeah, wait, right here. It says, new cast member Callum Turner as her fiancé in Newt's brother Theseus.
Yeah.
So there you go.
They just slipped that in there, you know?
Because that's not, like, big or anything.
There we go.
It sounds like the way how people who are trying to, like, humble brag about being engaged.
Yeah,
like,
right.
And this is my fiancé Theseus. And...
Oh my god, you didn't know? Yeah, he engaged me in Disneyland.
Course.
Yeah, we were in Cars Land, right over by Mater's little shop. Yeah, it was really cute. He gave me a churro and the ring was on it. Not picking on anybody who got engaged that way, BT dubs. Just...
That was really specific and random, though. I just want to throw that out there.
That's who I am. That should
also
be-
you'd have to go pretty far, I think, to get a churro in Cars Land. So
I've been there once. Okay, bro. Like, okay. So Lita and Theseus are engaged. Fine. Whatever. So
Callum Turner kind of looks like Matt Smith. In this photo.
Yeah, it's like a slightly skewed version, like alternate universe Matt Smith, right?
Yeah.
So my question is, like, I know, like, in the film, when Queenie sees the picture of Lita, blah, blah, and she says, like, isn't that family kind of eh? Well, were the Lestranges, like, always dark?
Mm-mm.
Or maybe was Grindelwald the turning point? I don't know.
Like, I mean, that's the thing, right? We have no idea.
Yeah. Because I think it's important to remember, I think a lot of people get this confused. She's a Lestrange, so she's related by blood to Rodolphus, not to Bellatrix. Mm-hmm. Bellatrix is a black by birth.
Mm-hmm.
Bellatrix is related by blood to a different cast member of the upcoming film, Rosier.
Yes.
There was some confusion before this episode.
Amy and I had a whole conversation about how wizards need to stop intermarrying because it's getting too much.
I can't handle it.
Everyone's related, dang it. So I think we don't know anything about Rodolphus's family at all.
Yeah.
So it's really, I mean, maybe it was.
I mean,
and even at this point, that sacred 28 list hadn't come out yet. That doesn't come out until the 1930s.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see how all of this kind of comes together.
Like, there's that indication from, like, what Queenie says that there's some sort of reputation. But is it, like...
I always thought it was more like, and this sounds horrible, but, like, mental illness. And you know how it was super stigmatized?
Mm. Yeah.
So it's almost like, the way she says it, it's almost like they're kind of crazy, aren't they? You know?
Yeah.
Like, they have a history of that. And, I mean, that's kind of horrible that wizards are thinking that. But I guess then it makes sense for why Newt would kind of be protective of Leeta.
Yeah. Or maybe even, like, just looking at the money dynamics. I mean, the Lestranges are an old family. Probably super rich. Obviously, Newt is Newt. Like, maybe that was more of a, like, really? Like, that family? Like, you're friends with her? You have anything in common with her? Like,
they're the Wizarding Kardashians or something?
Yeah. I don't know.
Ew. Or.
Yeah. Ew. I had another reference to make about her, but now I forgot. Oh! This is just a side note. You know, at the end of the first movie where Tina says, well, does Leeta like reading? And Newt says, I don't know much of what Leeta likes these days. Ever since that picture came out, my first reaction to that is, your brother. Anyway.
You should make a meme out of that.
The Meryl Streep shouting, your brother.
That would be really funny. Yeah.
Yeah, someone who's better at Photoshop than me. God. Send it to me.
Yeah. I mean, so do we think maybe the Lestranges started sympathizing with Grindelwald, maybe for the same reasons we speculate Queenie does? And then things kind of went downhill from there?
Maybe. I'm trying to look at family trees, because I feel like there's maybe something that we're missing in the family trees here. But
I think it might also be interesting, though, if we actually see and kind of get close to people in a family who believes this ideology.
Mm-hmm.
Because we kind of hear about the Black family doing that. Sirius talks about how his parents, like, weren't quite ready to join Voldemort, but were, like, supportive of his beliefs. So maybe to see a family up close like that, I mean, it would be fascinating commentary on current situations.
Yeah, that would definitely be interesting. Like, families that have maybe, like, selected bits and pieces of the message that they align with, but not necessarily the entire thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or even the entire thing.
Yeah.
And they're just like, yes, we think he's right.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that almost makes the stakes more real, to say there are people who actually believe he's right. He's not just like, ooh, the evil guy, you know?
Right.
Like, they're normal people.
Right.
Who are on his side.
What would WFT stand for?
WFT?
If you're thinking of abbreviations. WFT? So I'm on the Harry Potter lexicon. I suppose I could look it up. But it says here that the Lestrange family was already internationally notorious by 1926.
Where did they get that from?
That line
in
of
parentheses, WFT.
Sorry.
Well, Beast Let's was search. In 26, right? That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, maybe just drawing from the Queenie knows who the Lestranges are and she's in the U.S. That would be internationally known.
That wouldn't consider...
It's coming up as the film.
WFT?
Like, they've cut down to where to find them as their abbreviation.
Okay.
Oh, got it. Interesting.
It's W.
Instead of saying like FB.
Yeah.
Got it.
Because they're all going to be Fantastic Beasts and they've cut it down to like we do with like
yeah, I get
HBP.
It.
Yeah.
Hmm. Wait, so you genuinely want to know what WFT stands for, or did you guys figure that out? I'm confused.
We're we just set. Figured it out.
We sorted it.
And I'm also finding this.
Because I found World Family Tree.
What?
Hmm. Allison, I found this etymology, too, about the name Lestrange.
Ooh, I love etymology. Tell me.
It says, it echoes, I'm totally going to butcher this, but it echoes the French phrase La Tronche, but Etrange, I don't know.
Are you on the lexicon?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
That, it translates to the strange one, and it says, referring to Bellatrix's mental disturbance.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, you just said French and, like, the strange one, which made me think the stranger, which made me think Camus.
Oh.
Which is weird.
Yeah. No, I was just thinking, like, in reference to what you were saying about,
yeah.
Mental conditions. Whatever. Yeah.
Hmm. Wouldn't it be crazy if she brought up some Camus, though, too? Ooh, that book is weird. I don't like it.
Ooh. The surname may also allude to English journalist Roger L'Estrange, who is known for opposing religious toleration and for being involved in plots against the government.
Well, there you go.
This is a total side note, but I totally just got a message from Felicia, who says, so I'm working on the transcript for episode 208 of Alohomora on sorting, and y'all are right. J.K. Rowling has said before that the sorting hat is never wrong.
Ha!
In the interview with Emerson and Melissa.
Yes.
That's funny.
What are the odds?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm not sure. I don't want to go into the film being prejudiced against Leta, because the thing that I really love about these films is that I go in with no preconceived notions. It's part of the reason I loved the first movie so much. I wasn't let down by anything. I wasn't disappointed by the adaptation of some event in the book that I loved so much and just sucked on screen. And so I'm going to really try to keep an open mind about Leta, because like I said, I don't want to go in with some preconceived notion that she's this evil bee.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. I do love that too. I love just getting to have the surprise and delight of seeing this movie and not have any expectations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then I also just kind of threw in here, I don't know, do we think we're going to see the hunt for the Deathly Hallows? I mean, that qualifies as, like,
no.
Dark arts. No?
No. Mm-mm. That's over.
You think he's already got them all by that point?
No, I don't think he already has them, but I think it's pretty clear that Dumbledore and Grindelwald, that confrontation already happened. Ariana's already dead.
Right.
You know, that's in the past.
So he wouldn't still actively be searching?
No. In those images that Pottermore, Warner Brothers, whoever released, it was two wands.
The
Elder Wand and another wand.
Right.
So.
Which is the only one he ever really finds anyway.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe it's not done. Maybe it hasn't happened. Maybe we will get to see some flashbacks of that stuff. I mean, we know that they cast Ariana.
Yeah.
For some flashbacks, presumably, for movie 2. As far as I am aware, those scenes were never filmed. But that doesn't mean that they weren't. It just means, last I knew, those were not filmed.
We better be getting those flashbacks, man.
I'm sure that we will. But
yes.
I mean, don't forget.
They're going to be so short and fast, though.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Don't forget that the way, for anybody who doesn't know, the way like films work, and the screenplay is fluid. It changes every day, almost every hour sometimes. And with somebody like J.K. Rowling, who is trying to weave this web of five films, things are going to jump and move. And maybe they film some of these scenes and they don't use them till movie four.
Yeah, that's
true. That could happen. And I mean, we have to remember that stuff, which is why I wanted to bring up the whole thing about Jacob. It's just because at one point he was Newt's rival in movie one. We can't dismiss that that will never happen because it still could happen.
Yeah.
So right. I suppose that, yeah, I mean, I don't think we'll see the two of them ever be buddy-buddy because I firmly believe, despite the fact that everybody has their wants and a not about Dumbledore not being gay or whatever, I think that we will get maybe, if we're lucky, 5 minutes of Dumbledore time in movie two. If
we're not going to get much.
If we're lucky.
He's there as just like a, I don't know.
It's just as a sentry.
You have to have him there because that's where the story's going, but he's not forefront. This isn't Dumbledore's story.
Exactly.
Yeah. He'll show up later. He'll show up more in the other ones, but the way that I'm envisioning it is that he sets the plot in motion for Newt.
Yes. He has the answers more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking we have to remember they probably have like just a student teacher relationship.
Right.
I think they have about as much as a student teacher relationship as Harry and Dumbledore.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It took Harry and Dumbledore some time to build up to where they were. You know, by the time we get to the end of Half-Blood Prince, it had taken them some time to build up there. So it'll probably take Newt and Dumbledore a similar amount of time of interacting, of working together for him to be able to get anything out of Dumbledore. We know Dumbledore is a very secretive person, and it'll take him some time to get him to tell him anything.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times did Dumbledore tell Harry, "I will tell you the truth now," and didn't tell him anything? Like,
yeah. I'm intrigued by the fact that we might see Dumbledore make some legit, like, big mistakes.
Yes.
Which I'm so excited about, because the Dumbledore we know in Harry Potter is so calculated and he's so careful. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that he continually overlooks is love, his feelings, his emotions, and the like.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like, and I hope this is the case, because I would love to see an imperfect Dumbledore.
Human Dumbledore.
I think she said he's going to be more obviously a Gryffindor.
Mm.
Like, we're going to kind of see a little bit more impulsivity and like...
A younger Dumbledore is what she said. We're going to see a younger, more inexperienced.
Yeah.
Ooh, and like I said, I want to see some like Hamlet comparison. I want to see that crazy bent on one mission, makes massive mistakes that ends up getting people killed.
I don't think it's going to be that bad. I think that's the extreme.
No, okay, I don't want it to. Okay, I'm not saying I want one person to be alive at the end of these movies, because we know that doesn't happen. There are at least three people alive at the end of these movies. Four people alive at the end of these movies, for sure.
You don't know that all four of them are going to live.
Yes, we do. We know Newt and Tina are alive. We know Dumbledore lives through this point. And we know Grindelwald lives through this point.
Oh, okay.
So.
Well, I thought you were talking quartet, so I got you.
No. Just four people in general we know survive this thing. So it's not Hamlet. Look.
And hopefully the beasts survive as well.
No. If the Niffler dies, I riot.
Oh my god. Guys, really? Well, anyway. I mean, since we're talking about Nifflers and stuff, let's just move on to the Newt case for this episode.
Yay!
This is, I don't know how to pronounce the name of this creature. In English, it means red dwarf. What is that? Like, Nain Rogue? Rouge, maybe?
Rouge? I would say Rouge.
Yeah.
Non-Rouge? Let's see what,
What the freak is this thing?
Well, let me give you some facts. Let me give you the 411 here. So, the legend of the Red Dwarf, I'm just going to say that because it's better and easier, originated in Normandy, France. This is a French beast. Ooh la la. They're described as a childlike with blazing red eyes and long rotten teeth. Ugh. Sounds like my neighbor. They're also stylish, and they either wear red, or black fur boots. What? What does this thing look like? Is it humanoid?
Click on the picture!
Wait, there's a picture?
There is
the reference
a picture.
Is at the bottom.
Where?
At the very
it
bottom.
It says photos for reference.
Oh, photos for reference. Oh, boy. Oh, boy, it's opening. Oh, it's the devil, essentially. Got it. Okay. Cool.
Why does this one look like it has a banana head?
A banana head? Oh, boy. Okay, yeah, so essentially, guys, just, like, picture the Cheeto, but with a red face and horns, and that's what this thing looks like. So, wow, okay, if I knew. Red or black fur boots, so definitely not a vegan. Cool. It is said to be the harbinger of
harbinger.
Doom. Harbinger. Are you sure that's how that's said?
Is that how you say that?
I'm pretty sure, like 80% sure.
It says the person or thing that announces or signals the approach of another. Okay, so interesting. Okay. What? Okay, this is... Okay, I feel like my comparison to the Cheeto just a minute ago is more legit than ever, because this says the Red Dwarf has also become an urban legend in Detroit, Michigan. people claim he's made appearances before the Battle of Bloody Run, which is following the French and Indian War. Native Americans attempted to drive out the British. And that sounds about right. In 1805, the War of 1812, and the 12th Street Riot in 1967, and also a snowstorm in 1976.
This is craziness.
What is this thing?
Why
this is,
Detroit?
I don't know.
I mean, Motor City? It's red. Maybe that's...
But is there, like, a strong Normandy French population in Detroit? Like...
Maybe.
Why nowhere else?
Let's see. What population... what would that be, like, ethnicity of Detroit? Would that be ethnicity?
Maybe...
Like, heritage, maybe?
Yeah.
Heritage.
Ancestry.
That makes more sense, heritage.
Okay, I'm scrolling through these pictures, guys, and there's a little really funny one a little bit down where it's like a little kid dressed up as this or whatever in like it, basically a wagon and painted on the side. For some reason, I find this really funny. It just says, "Be gone, Beelzebub." Like, what?
Okay. Wow.
All right.
Wild times in Detroit.
Apparently.
Let's see. Architecture, demographics.
Listeners in Detroit, tell us how this goes.
Let's just pretend it's the 1920s. In 1920, Detroit was 95.8% white. So it was European, mostly European settlers. And now it's only 10% white, for the record. Only 10%. It's otherwise it's mostly black or African American, Hispanic or Latino, or Asian. This is according to Wiki, for the record.
So Wikipedia, it says its origins in the early French settlement of Detroit are proposed as deriving from Norman French tales of the Lutin, a type of hobgoblin, along with Native American legends of an quote impish offspring of the stone god, quote. According to various narratives surrounding the figure, Detroit's founder, Antoine de la Mothe Cadillac, was told by a fortune teller to appease the Nain Rouge, but upon encountering the creature, he smacked it with his cane and shouted, "Get out of my way, you red imp." As a consequence...
I mean, wouldn't you?
As a consequence...
That's my reaction to that thing.
As a consequence, a string of bad luck befell Cadillac. He was charged with abuse of power and reassigned to Louisiana, later returning to France, where he was briefly imprisoned and eventually lost his fortune. The Nain Rouge legend has become a part of contemporary Detroit culture. Each spring, the city hosts a community festival and costume parade called the March Day Nain Rouge.
Hmm.
But, like, why
Detroit did... listeners, tell us about this.
Yeah, this is so bizarre. Yeah. More about that parade. It says that the creature is traditionally chased out of the city, although the parade stays entirely within Midtown neighborhood. The conclusion of the parade is an effigy, or the effigy is destroyed, thus, quote, banishing the evil spirit from the city for another year. Hmm. This is like Detroit's alternate version of Mardi Gras.
Huh.
Sounds like a party to me. Let's banish some evil spirits.
Like a French tradition.
Let's do it.
Right? So.
True. Huh.
I mean, this thing is just very interesting. Legend holds that Nain Rouge's appearance would presage terrible events for the city. The creature is said to have appeared on July 30, 1763, before the Battle of Bloody Run, where 58 British soldiers were killed by Native Americans. Supposedly, the Nain Rouge danced among the corpses on the banks of the Detroit River after the battle, and the river turned red with blood for days after.
Lovely.
According to the tale, all the misfortunes of Governor and General William Hull leading to the surrender of Detroit in the War of 1812 are blamed on the Nain Rouge.
Hmm.
I do not know. I feel very uninformed about this, and I don't like it.
Yeah, how have I never heard about this when they have like a giant parade and everything? Like, you'd think I'd know.
How does this not come up on like anything ever?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if I know anyone who lives in Detroit or anywhere near Detroit, and I don't think I do.
Like, I've seen 10 billion pictures of people celebrating Mardi Gras on their Facebook pages.
Yeah.
Like, why is no one posting about this parade for banishing the evil spirit of this red imp guy? Like, that's what I want to see on my timeline.
Yeah.
I'm, like, just very intrigued. Like, I want to go. I would probably be really afraid.
Let's do it.
Like, I feel
Let's take a field trip.
Yeah, for doubt.
Speak Beastie road trip.
Let's go find it.
In the spring. Spring's coming up, guys.
It's in, like, 2 weeks.
Let's go.
Less than 2 weeks.
Let's find out when the parade is.
Well.
Road trip.
Why do they let him? They let him give a speech? They let the dwarf give a speech.
Okay, so they're trying to banish it, yet they let him have a speech. See, guys, my comparison. More real by the minute. Just saying. Weird. Where'd you find that info, Lizzie?
The Metro Times. The Detroit Metro Times. The legend.
Okay. Wow.
The legend of the legend of Detroit's Nain Rouge. There's a really funny photo. Actually involved of people being like, be nice to them. Sending it right now
as everybody looks up that art. Oh my gosh, stop name shame. Be nice to Nain. Nain loves Detroit. What
is happening here,
guys?
No,
I think
offense, Detroitians
found like an
it's
entire
springtime
subculture.
Wait, this top line. Look, this top line in this article, it's springtime in Detroit, a city that has once again fallen, as has happened so many times throughout its history. What the freaking hell?
Detroit, what's going on with you?
Riding atop a chariot fashioned to resemble a giant cockroach. What?
This is so strange.
A fire dancer twirls at the foot of a large banner depicting an apocalyptic mushroom cloud. Above it is the message, two Detroits is not enough. Below, Detroit versus Detroit versus Detroit. What?
Guys. Whoa.
Everything about this fascinates me and horrifies me at the same time.
What? Oh my gosh, this whole article is crazy.
Keep reading it. Read it, please.
The legend of the Nain Rouge is said to go back to 1701, when Antoine de la Monte Cadillac founded Detroit. The shortened and oft-repeated version of the tale states that Cadillac was attacked by the feared red dwarf, who then cursed Cadillac in the city. Blah, blah, blah. Blah, 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 blah.
Okay, what? There's, like, Nain Rouge supporters, right? With the signs. Okay, so this one guy says...
Oh my gosh, guys, this parade started in 2010!
What? Oh my god. Okay, but anyways, this guy says, he goes up and down the parade route passing out flyers. He's pro Nain Rouge. He thinks this is cruel. He says, He's also put off by the overwhelmingly negative tone of the march in past years. He says people have pushed him, ripping the signs and flyers out of his hands and reasoning that if he is pro-Nain, he must be anti-Detroit.
Oh my gosh.
This is intense.
There's also a website.
I didn't know that, like, this...
Holy cow. We were talking about how a place like New Orleans and Detroit have a lot of similarity, especially around their French heritage and founding, and how New Orleans has Mardi Gras and Detroit really doesn't. So it's basically Detroit's Mardi Gras.
Dang.
Which I already said.
This is crazy.
I just want to be sure the credit goes
and
to
people,
me.
This is cool. Parade of people dressed in disguises so as not to be recognized by the Nain. What?
Yeah, you have to wear something different every year so he doesn't recognize you. So he's not like...
Holy crap, guys! How have we not heard about this? In 2015, it was reported some 5,000 attended the parade! What?
Oh my god.
Well, not us, clearly.
Nope. Well, I think we need to just stop. Because...
I'm going down a rabbit hole, though.
Yeah,
this is
That's the problem, Allison.
Yeah.
Is that this is only a 90-minute show.
We need to dig ourselves out of this hole for a second.
Yeah, let's jump out of the rabbit hole. But y'all, really, look up this weird-ass beast.
It's crazy.
We don't see it in I don't want to see it. I'm done. Mm-mm.
No, I don't.
Over it.
I don't think, think we'll ever go to Detroit. We will probably... Well, I mean, we go to Paris, probably not Normandy, though, which is cool. That's good. So hopefully we'll never see it. This is a hard pass. Hard pass. Hard pass.
All right. So moving on to Kowalski's Corner, which is kind of a new segment we've started so that when we have guests like Kat and Allison on, they can just ask whatever question they want. So what have you guys got?
Mine is lame, so I'll go first so we can finish with the better one. All I could think of was, if you could see the Wizarding World in any place in the world, where would you want to see it, and what do you think it would be like?
That's not lame. That's fun.
Egypt.
Ooh.
That's a good answer. I dig it.
I'm like...
I'd want to see how mythology mixed in.
Yeah. I'm like super fascinated with like everything Egyptian. I think that would be really, really cool.
We can get more Weasley stuff if we go to Egypt.
Yeah. And, like, are the pharaohs really, like, wizards? Is that the deal?
Ooh! Ooh!
Yeah.
Where would I want to...
Yeah, so my question is, what other series or novel or literature in general would you, the listener, like to see referenced in or... act as an influence for future Beast films? You know, Allison brought up a couple of them today, and it got me thinking about what other fun things J.K. Rowling could draw from, and I think there's a crap load of possibilities. So,
Agatha Christie.
Ooh.
I still want her to be a witch. Or I still just, like, want that news to, like, pop up somewhere. Like, just, like, on some newspaper, like, Agatha Christie reappears, or, you know, something, you know.
Sure. I get it. That would be fun. I dig that.
Or, like, and Houdini.
Ooh.
Him, too.
Yeah.
It'd be fun.
Did Amy answer?
Did I answer?
Did you answer about the literature?
No, but I'm the only one who answered about the first question.
Yeah, I got cut
well,
off.
Well, what the heck?
I was gonna say the Caribbean.
Oh.
Ooh.
That would be cool.
Wizard Moana. That's not the Caribbean, but now I'm thinking Wizard Moana, and I think that's sweet.
I was also thinking Wizard Moana, so I'm glad you picked up what I was putting down.
You're welcome.
What should I
know?
Well, except for Moana's not the Caribbean. Moana is
Hawaii.
Polynesia.
All right, so that's it for this week's episode. This week's podcast question, there's two, so listen up, everyone. Out of the characters we discussed, who do you think is most likely to go to the dark side? And then our bonus question, do you live in Detroit? Tell us about this parade. We really want to know more about
Please.
This parade.
Apparently 5,000 people in Detroit showed up in 2015.
Were you
so, like,
one of them?
send us
right
pics.
Like, why aren't you all telling us about this?
And tell us all about it. Please. Inquiring minds need.
We'd love to hear from you, so drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets or email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. And last but not least, leave us a review on iTunes. We love to hear what you guys think of the show and all that good stuff. So make sure you leave us a review.
And if you guys want to scream at us over the interwebs, you can find us over on Twitter and Instagram at speakbeastie, facebook.com/speakbeastie, Tumblr, speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com. And don't forget to head over to Patreon and, you know, support this really awesome show. Literally the only Fantastic Beast podcast on the web, guys, like the only one that's dedicated to the show. Patreon.com/speakbeastie, SPEAKBEASTY. I just finger spelled that because I was practicing. So patreon.com/speakbeastie. I think you can sponsor for like $2. So, I mean, just take a walk down the street and I'm sure you could find 200 pennies. Like,
wow, where are you living? No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, yeah, you could totally do that. So please. And then I promise I'll never come on the show again if you both sponsor it. Wouldn't that be funny if you got like 50 sponsors and they were like, please never have Kat on the show again. And with that, I'm out of here. I'm Kat.
I'm Allison.
I'm Lizzie.
And I'm Amy. Case closed.